This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Tom Hartman. Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Broadcasting live today from New Hampshire, from Radio Row here, put together by Talk Radio News, talkradionews.com. And a lot of candidates flying through here. We spent some time this morning with Bill Richardson, a lot of other folks going through. It's just a wild and crazy time. New Hampshire is voting, and so far it looks like Dixville Notch has voted for Barack Obama and John McCain. So we'll see where that goes. As Dixville Notch goes, not necessarily so goes the country. Melissa Etheridge is on the line with us. And hey, Melissa, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you, Tom.
So glad to have you with us. You are calling in to advocate for Dennis Kucinich's candidacy.
You know, yes, I am. I love your program, and I think you're awesome, and I just want to put that out.
Thank you.
And I, like you, will absolutely support whomever my party supports, but I believe that the issues and the platform and the things that Kucinich brings to the Democratic Party, the progressive thoughts and the message of change that he brings, is so important to include in the Democratic Party that I'm really trying to keep him in the running for a while to get those messages across.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And, in fact, it's one of the reasons why recently I went and gave some money to his campaign. His voice is important whether or not he wins.
Yeah, and I keep hearing, well, he's not electable. It's not about how tall he is. It's about his issues, you know.
Yep. In fact, here in New Hampshire, I was just watching local television this morning when I got up, and here in New Hampshire, he's running ads. I mean, in the first half hour of this local news show that I saw, there were three or four Republican ads, and I think he was the only Democratic ad that I saw. So I thought, hey, that's great. The Kucinich campaign is running advertising here in New Hampshire. The threshold that ABC had set for him, for all the candidates, their 5% threshold, he beat that on Facebook.
Yeah.
And Facebook was one of the co-sponsors. What's the deal here?
Imagine that. Well, when you look at the sponsors, when you look at ABC, which is totally owned by Walt Disney, when you look at Facebook, which is a huge corporate, computer thing, and you see their true the things that they feel are important and the things that they don't want changed. And I don't think there was anyone sinister back there going, ha ha, we're not going to allow him on the stage. I think that it's more convenient for them to just, let's not talk about that. Let's move this way.
Well, to some extent, they're doing the same thing to John Edwards. It astounds me how his, John Edwards and Dennis Kucinich being the two most outspoken populist, anti-corporate people who are running, and that message just doesn't make it through the media filter, either one of them.
The media filter is completely and totally run for the corporate mind. And I think this right now is such an awesome time for all of us to wake up and really look and see what all these corporate structures are doing in our government and doing to our lives every single day, and how they're just pulling these little puppet strings to get us to buy this, to get us to feel this way, to lead us in a certain way. And it's just time to just wake up and go, yeah, done with that.
Yeah, we're talking with Melissa Etheridge, who is calling and speaking on behalf of the Dennis Kucinich campaign today, the New Hampshire primary. The president of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Tom Donahue, announced apparently this morning, it might have been yesterday afternoon, but it's in this morning's news, that he's alarmed at the increasingly populist tone of the 2008 political campaign. Presumably this would include Huckabee on the Republican side, who's being characterized as a populist, I think to some extent actually is. And he said his organization is willing to spend in excess of $60 million. And he says this is a verbatim quote, any anti-business candidates, we're going to bite you so strong The organization will be so strong that when it bites you in the butt, you'll bleed. That's a verbatim quote from the president of the Chamber of Commerce. It's like businesses declaring war on Americans.
On Americans. And when we really stop and look and say, wait a minute, but we're all employees of all this, and we're buying all their products. And I don't know, I finally saw the other day in some article where they called it soft fascism.
Yep.
And when you start to understand the true definition of fascism, you see just where we're headed.
Yep.
And I don't...
I'd say where we already are, to some extent.
Where we already are. And now is the time. I'm calling about Kucinich, but I'm calling about our democracy right now. And our democracy's on the line. And it's so important for every single one of us, because it's the one thing we have is a vote, is to get in there. And can you imagine how it's going to be if 60%, 70%, 75%, 80% of Americans actually who are registered to vote can get out and vote and do that and completely shake up? You know, the corporate world's going to have to start listening to us.
Right, and that's why we need to even go beyond just voting. We need to show up at the party level, volunteer, be there every month and speak out.
I know people are tired of hearing celebrities talking in politics, but I believe it so deeply in my heart, I have to just say, yeah, sorry, I know you know me, but I have a chance to call Tom Hartman and say this, but I truly believe it.
Yeah, it's a good and important message. We're talking with Melissa Etheridge, who's supporting the Kucinich candidacy in this election. And Melissa, where does the Kucinich campaign go from here?
Well, a lot of it depends on what the results of today are. If he can move ahead of Richardson, if he can get up there in that 3-4 thing to show mm-hmm. that even if they didn't allow him on the debates, his voice matters. I think that will provide a big boost for him and the campaign and all of us and the message. If not, I think it's important that the message gets out, and I think he will still work on that, but he's going to find, you know, I don't know, because I certainly can't speak for him.
Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah. I understand. And your own personal involvement in this came about because...
You know, because I listened. I listened to their platforms. I read what they were at, and I sat on the gay forum that we had a couple months ago,
mm-hmm.
and I spoke with Clinton, Obama, Edwards, Richardson, and Kucinich and Gravel. And to sit there and watch, you know, Hillary Clinton look at me and say, you know, hey, I'm all for gay rights, but I'm sorry, you just can't get married. And kind of hear them say...
It's a rather bizarre juxtaposition.
It was truly bizarre. And over and over. And then to see Dennis Kucinich walk out and go, you know what? It's about equality, folks. And you're either for equality or you're not. And I just went, there you go. You're my guy.
Yeah, this is a civil rights issue.
Yeah. And it's not just because, well, you know what, middle America, they're a little squeamish about the marriage thing right now. Because I know that Obama, Edwards, and Clinton, and even Richardson are not truly in their heart against my marrying my partner and having kids. I know that. But that they are willing to go, you know what, it's the ooh thing, you know, we're just not going to bring that up right now.
Well, and Elizabeth Edwards actually has come out and said, you know, she's totally in favor of gay marriage.
Yeah.
And that... You know, kind of on the QT, I guess the implicit message is that if her husband's elected president, so will he be. But you just can't say that and get elected right now, which is a tough one.
When did we become that?
I remember four years ago talking with the campaign manager for one of the leading campaigns about one of the leading Democrats in the campaign about health care reform and single payer health care. And he said, you know, my candidate is actually in favor of single-payer health care, but he can't talk about that because it will destroy him in the campaign. And this is one of the three people who was nearly the Democratic nominee.
It's like we are all mind-controlled in this, and we're playing some sort of silly game, and truth is something that is talked about in the back rooms.
Yeah.
So I want a leader who... It leads from his heart, because I think that's what makes America great. Those are all the things that have always made America great.
Yeah, it's time for some radical truth telling, as they say, for our political leaders in particular to be out there and saying, you know, okay, I support this, and I'll tell you that I support this.
You're right, and that's what keeps the people that we believe are so ignorant that they're not going to vote for this. That's what keeps them ignorant, because it's like, oh, it must be powerful because nobody's talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I'm on the phone yabbering with you.
Well, I appreciate the call, Melissa, and thanks so much for the great work you're doing. Not just as a performer, as an artist, a musician, but also as an American. You know,
as an American, I love this country. I don't think there's any other country where you can be a big old rock and roll lesbian and be successful. And I'm grateful to my country, and I want to see it treated well, and I want to see everyone have that opportunity.
Thank you, Melissa Etheridge.
Thank you.
The Tom Hartman Program, the true people's radio. Tom Hartman.
Ain't no surplus now, it's gone. Oh, the debt grows every day. Yes, the balance on our loans is bigger than Star Jones. Tell the kids they'll have to pay.
Oh, this must be George's song.
I don't know what I'm gonna do.
Definitely George's song.
I wish this debt would go away. I could try to pay these bills, or sell Dick Cheney's pills, or put Congress on eBay. And
Oh, my. $9 trillion. The vast majority of a run-up by Ronald Reagan, George Bush Sr., and George Bush Jr. Isn't it mind-boggling? Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. James Boyce is here with me. We're broadcasting live from Manchester, New Hampshire. Today, obviously the primary happening. James is was a senior advisor to the Kerry campaign in 2004. He's currently a blogger over at Huffington Post and a Democratic strategist for MSNBC. James,
mm-hmm.
Welcome.
Thanks, Tom.
Glad
thanks for having me
here with us. Yesterday, Hillary Clinton last night apparently had a bit of a teary moment. And if you go back and look at how such moments have been handled in the press, looking at just a few stories from the New York Times. Here's an AP story about Mitt Romney's eyes filled with tears Monday as the Republican presidential contender recalled watching the casket of a soldier. In other words, a noble thing. Mm-hmm. George W. Bush. This from the Washington Post. The pictures were just what the White House wanted, a teary-eyed President Bush presenting the Medal of Honor posthumously to a slain war hero in the East Room. So he cries it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Robert Gates, our current Secretary of Defense. Robert Gates almost broke down as he gave a speech at a Marine Corps dinner showing feelings of bringing a more human side to the role of Defense Secretary. Oh, it's a good thing, you know, mm-hmm. emotions. George Herbert Walker Bush wiping away tears as he recalled,
cries quite a bit.
Yeah, these days, particularly as he recalled praying at Camp David before ordering the start of the Persian Gulf War. Hillary Clinton cries, and the media the media is trying to figure out whether their main narrative is going to be that, oh my God, we're going to have a teary-eyed woman in the White House on the one hand, mm-hmm. or what did she do? Stick a fork in her leg to make herself, you know, under the table. It's what's wrong with somebody being a human being? I don't get it.
Oh, I don't get that either, Tom. You know, one thing that's interesting though about this day and age is a couple years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, you would have had to read the news reports. Now, go to HuffingtonPost.com. They have the video up, and you can see and you can kind of judge for yourself. And that's what's fascinating about this race is now. You can see things like that happen. You can watch them happen. You can judge for yourself. So maybe you don't have to buy into the media narrative that somehow she's weepy, whereas someone else is being emotional or touched by the moment. But you can go look for yourself. And I think that's what's changing in politics right now.
Yeah. Well, this is not definitely an Ed Muskie kind of thing, you know, where it looks like, you know, Chuck Colson or somebody put acid in his coffee. I mean, there's serious stories. You know, the Nixon campaign sent somebody out there to medicate him before he got up on that.
And even I have to wonder how Howard Dean would have survived the scream this time around if there had been video cameras there to showcase the whole time and they hadn't just pulled the one little thing out. I mean, there would have been a lot more new media coverage of that moment. He might have survived it a little better 4 years later.
Yeah. What's your sense? You're not advocating for any particular candidate.
I'm observing this time around. I'm quite enjoying it. Actually, I had to ask somebody if they had a Radio Row last time because I was so busy in the Kerry world, I had no idea.
Well, that's my question. As a senior advisor to the Kerry campaign, why did John Kerry wait, 17 or 19 days to respond to the Swift boats? Why What were the lessons? You know, I hope you would agree that that was a blunder.
Oh, absolutely. It's a horrible blunder.
What were the mistakes that Kerry made that were seen repeated by other candidates now, or that were not seen repeated, the lessons learned that were seen, you know, being played out well?
Well, I think at the fundamental level, on a very personal level for John Kerry, it was very hard for him to respond or think that he needed to respond to the swift vote tax to the extent that he clearly did, and people thought at the time that he did, because he knew their charges were false, you know. And it's very hard for someone to say, well, wait a minute, these guys weren't there. I know they weren't there. I was there. They're lying. Why, you know, he's kind of felt he was proving a negative. The D.C. consultants involved, and I was very involved in these conversations, were very much like, oh, this is just another attack. You know, this is kind of politics. And they actually went so far, and if you thought of the D.C. consultants...
The Bob Shrum types.
Well, if you, let's
not
say,
specifically
but,
to name
let's
him.
Say,
but
let's
mean,
not name names, but if you thought of the D.C. consultant that first comes to mind when you think of the Kerry campaign, they went in focus group responses. And my idea was, well, I got a response, but I can't say it on air right now. But, you know, they didn't fight back. So people have learned that lesson a little bit. Maybe not completely, but a little bit.
Yeah, interesting. It seems that the Obama wave is breaking out of just the original states.
Wow.
I mean, this is what's being reported, that the national polls are starting to pick up. At what point do you think the Clinton campaign and, for that matter, the John Edwards campaign are going to start putting positions in, you know, talking about the specifics of Obama's positions, because I think most people don't know all the details of his positions.
Well, most people don't know, but I mean, as we've learned, unfortunately, I think the tidal wave that helped, you know, George Bush in 2000 when people said, well, he doesn't have any positions, I mean, it's kind of helping the Democrats this time, to be honest.
Right.
I mean, there's an emotional reaction to Barack Obama that can't completely be described. They're expecting 500,000 people today in New Hampshire. That's half the state. They're expecting to vote today.
Wow.
You know, and if that happens, you know, it's going to be a major victory for Senator Obama today. And, you know, there's already more than rumors that, you know, Senator Clinton's basically looking at, you know, walking away from Nevada and South Carolina and maybe making a stand on February 5th somewhere. But she may not even be able to do that.
That's interesting. That's interesting. James Boyce, you can read his blog over at Huffington Post. Former senior advisor of the Kerry campaign in 2004, currently MSNBC media strategist or consultant.
On-air guy.
There you go. Thanks a lot, James.
Okay, thanks, I appreciate it.
27 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
And welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border. And with us now, Terry Shoemaker. Terry was the co-chair of Bill Clinton's New Hampshire campaigns in 92 and 96. He's a member of Hillary Clinton's steering committee, former DNC member, former U.S. ambassador to Trinidad.
Yes.
And a lawyer in Concord, New Hampshire. And I should say, I lived in New Hampshire from 78 to 83. It's a great state, but you're one of the few actual New Hampshire folks running around loose here in the Radio Row area.
Well, welcome back, Tom. It's great to have you back in the Granite State. I know you voted in the New Hampshire primary at least once.
In 1980, yeah. It's been a while. It's been a long time.
We're delighted you're here in our state, and we're delighted to have so much excitement and activity on both sides of the aisle in this primary.
So as a spokesperson for the Hillary Clinton campaign, and I'm assuming that that's your primary role here.
Well, I'm actually here to talk about the New Hampshire primary as well, and I'm happy to try to help all of you visiting journalists do your jobs.
Well, the Dixville Notch results are in.
Yes.
And, you know, Barack Obama and John McCain. And Dixville Notch is actually, my recollection from having lived here, is that it's actually a fairly good indicator of the way the state's going to go. Am I wrong on that?
Well, they've gone both ways. In some years they're very on with what the end results end up being. Other years they've, I think last time a majority on the Democratic side went for General Clark.
I see.
So
they can be contrarian.
Yes, they can be.
And so what's your sense of how this is playing out here, and how is the primary process? I did an hour with Sirius, with Alex Bennett and Sirius Satellite over at the Red Arrow Cafe 2 hours ago. And, you know, just getting out there and in the city and the retail politics of this thing. I mean, the candidates are everywhere. They're just absolutely everywhere, and the hordes, you know, I mean, yeah. Particularly the Ron Paul hordes, oddly enough. If you want to, you know, that they're the most visible that I've seen anyway. What's your sense of what's going on?
Well, first of all, this year is different in one respect, and I think it's different in less than a positive way, and that is the calendar has become so compressed with so many events packed in right after the holidays.
Yeah.
I've been doing this for 40 years now. My first New Hampshire primary was handing out leaflets for Gene McCarthy as a college student.
Oh, wow.
And back then, the New Hampshire primary was in mid-March.
Yeah.
And Iowa preceded it, and then there was a period of several weeks, sometimes as many as 5 weeks, where the voters could reflect on what had happened in the earlier states.
Which
and
makes
that's
good
not,
sense.
Makes very good sense. And I was one of the people that served on the Democratic National Committee Primary Commission that was charged with trying to improve the calendar, and I ended up voting against the majority of that commission's recommendations to essentially more front load the calendar. Mm-hmm. And what you're seeing now is people trying to catch up at the last minute, trying to do what used to be done over a period of weeks in a period of days.
Yeah. Terry, you want to take some calls?
Sure.
Yeah, this would be interesting. We're talking with Terry Shoemaker. He's co-chair of, or excuse me, a member of Hillary Clinton's steering committee here, but also an attorney here in Concord and from New Hampshire, and just to see what some of our callers have to say about what's going on in life, you know, in life in the campaigns, as it were. Gene in Napa, California. Gene, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I didn't know I was going to be talking to your guest. My concern was the way Dennis Kucinich and John Edwards are excluded from the media coverage of the primary. I think it's harmful censorship, and I'm hoping we can coin a term for this kind of totalitarian tactic. It's a, you know, something strong and definite that will make us capable of talking about it and challenging it.
Mm-hmm. Gene, I don't disagree. Terry, your thoughts on this?
Well, I would just like to thank you for calling in, and there's been a lot of controversy here in New Hampshire about the networks excluding certain candidates from the debates. But I can tell you that the state of New Hampshire doesn't exclude anybody. We're the most inclusive primary of all of the primaries and caucuses. We have 42 candidates on the ballot here in New Hampshire. By coincidence, 21 Republicans, 21 Democrats. Anybody can run for president of the United States
in New Hampshire. And a lot of anybody's
We keep alive the American dream, and the only requirement is you fill out a one-page form, you sign it yourself, and you pay a $1,000 filing fee. And if you can convince our Secretary of State that you cannot afford the $1,000, he has the authority to waive it. So the state of New Hampshire and the New Hampshire primary stands for everybody participating, and I'm really glad you brought up that point, because it's important that the country know that New Hampshire keeps the American dream alive, that any boy or girl can grow up to be president.
If only the national media were so open. Marty in Los Angeles listening to us on K-Talk. Hey, Marty, you're on the air with me and with Terry Shoemaker.
Yeah, I just wanted to say regarding Hillary's emotional thing yesterday. I think that over the last year we've seen the Clinton campaign from people like McAuliffe and Carville and Begala been telling us, you know, they've got it wrapped up, they have all this money, all this organization, all these endorsements. And the only thing they didn't have, Tom, and to your guest, were the voters. And I think that her outburst yesterday, not outburst, but her just show of emotion was more of a sign of, you know what, I'm not going to make it because I'm being rejected. And I think that, I think it actually would be a good thing. I know your guest will disagree, but it would be a good thing if Hillary Clinton came in third in New Hampshire, because she'd be essentially out of it, and the people would be saying, just like what you were saying before about your previous caller with Edwards and Kucinich, that the Democratic Party is for the regular people, not to be condescended to, not to be told that we've got it wrapped up, we're inevitable, we can't be beat. As soon as we hear that, we go against that. And I think that's what Hillary's outburst was yesterday.
Marty, thank you for the call. Marty brings up two issues, really. One is, you know, the nature of the Democratic Party and the nature of Hillary Clinton's candidacy, how it's been presented. It's been presented in the media, in the corporate media, as almost an imperial, you know, a given kind of thing, you know, the moving of the dynasty, the big machine, and number one. And number two, and I'd love to hear you speak to that, Terry, and frankly, my take, having watched her emotional outburst, in quotes, is that it was entirely appropriate. I thought, you know, in context. But the other one is, if she comes in third here in New Hampshire, or even if she comes in second here in New Hampshire, she has a formidable, however you say that word, machine. I mean, she has a lot of support all across the United States, enormous name recognition, a huge war chest. She could survive pretty much anything happening here, could she not?
Well, I agree with that. But first of all, she's not going to come in third in New Hampshire. She's going to do fine here. She may not actually be at the top, but she'll do fine to go on. I would like to say several things to the caller. First of all, I only saw the, because I was with her yesterday afternoon, I only saw the clip once. But I've known Hillary Clinton for almost 20 years, and she is a warm, caring person. What she said, and I think if you listen to what she said, she got a little choked up. Well, you know, I get a little choked up sometimes when I talk about something I care about. But I thought the important thing was what she said, and what she said was that this is very personal to her. She has been working on these causes, children's rights, education, health care, for decades. She cares intensely about them, and that's why she's running for president. With regard to how the campaign has been portrayed in the media, I have been going to events with her in New Hampshire since last February. I have never heard her or anybody close to her say she was inevitable. I have seen her work very, very hard. People react to her very positively here in New Hampshire, and they come out of events uniformly and say, my goodness, she's not at all like what they say about her in the media.
And having met her, she really is very personable in person. Rick in Texas, you're on the air. Hey, Rick, what's on your mind today?
Tom, good afternoon or good morning. I when she had that incident, I saw it and I said, you know, that was the first time she's really moved me as a voter. And I was really struck by her passion. And I just wish she would have done, do a lot more of it. Not cry, but really speak passionately about her beliefs and what she's really running for.
At
this point in time, it's been like I'm the ex-president's wife and I deserve this.
Yeah, well, good point, Rick. Rick and Terry, I mean, she's the first woman to seriously run for president of the United States. And sexism and misogyny are deeply ingrained in our culture. And we gave African-American males the right to vote long before we gave women the right to vote in the United States. I mean, arguably, it wasn't carried through, but it's a real problem. How does a woman deal with this? I mean, you know, they used to talk about not having women pilots and not having women astronauts. I mean, we're both old enough to remember all of those debates.
Absolutely.
And so, how does she do that? That balancing act?
Actually, Hillary Clinton applied to be an astronaut, and
really?
We got a letter back from NASA saying, "I'm sorry, young lady, but we only accept men." And that was one of the things that got her going and to show that women could do things. And I think it is very difficult for a woman. Two of the leaders of our campaign here happen to be the Speaker of the New Hampshire House, who's a woman, and the President of the New Hampshire Senate, who's a woman. And they both have told me that running as a woman candidate, and Hillary's experienced this, is difficult because if you come across too strong, they say you don't have a soft side, you don't have any emotion. If you come across as too feminine, too weak, then they say, well, you're not strong enough to stand up to the Iranians or the Iraqis or whoever. I think she's run a masterful campaign at showing that she can be president. I believe she's ready to be president tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., and I have no question she's the best qualified.
Well, Terry Shoemaker, you're an articulate advocate for her, and I appreciate you dropping by the program. Terry Shoemaker, an attorney here in Concord, New Hampshire, up the road in Concord, New Hampshire, and a member of Hillary Clinton's steering committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
Thank you. you can say that of any of the Democratic candidates right now.
We've got a great field out there. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. And Ambassador Elizabeth Bagley is with us, the former ambassador to Portugal. And you were ambassador to Portugal during the Clinton administration.
Yes, in the beginning part of the Clinton administration from 1993 to 1997.
And welcome to the program, by
Thank
the way.
Thank you. Good to be here.
One of the arguments that I've heard now several times on the right that I suspect if Hillary Clinton is the nominee will become one of the major talking points is, would you vote for Laura Bush if she was running? Right? In other words, how does being a first lady translate into being a presidential candidate?
Mm-hmm.
Hillary Clinton as first lady came to Portugal when you mm-hmm. were the ambassador there. You knew her mm-hmm. from that time. What differentiates her from other first ladies? I mean, obviously she's a U.S. senator right now,
and with
a full term more experience than Barack Obama has. So you know, there's an easy answer to that, but I'm interested in the more complex answer: who she is and how her time in the White House actually is a qualification.
Well,
in your
I would not compare it to Laura Bush. I think Laura probably has a lot of influence on her husband privately, but Hillary was the first one. I'd compare her to Eleanor Roosevelt.
Yeah.
I think she was the president's eyes and ears, as Eleanor was the president's, her husband's legs during World War II. Hillary, when the president was unable to travel, Hillary was traveling. She traveled to 85 different countries. She was the human face of the Clinton administration. She delivered tough messages to President Messiar. She delivered tough messages to President Mugabe. She was, as you know, went to Beijing, an historic conference of women, and never happened before, UN conference on women, and talked about women's rights or human rights, the first time that it ever happened, the first time anyone has ever heard. And she has always been a rock star all over the world. She is an inspiration to women, especially because she's been involved. She founded Vital Voices, which I'm on the board of now. It's now a charitable organization, but she was the first one to establish a women's office at the State Department through Vital Voices, which was an attempt to very successful to empower women throughout the world politically, economically, socially, microfinancing, microcredits for small businesses. She started that. She was the first to see that. She was the first. We actually have a letter that went out to the press about a month ago from former ambassadors, and it was all about what she had done in their countries as not just someone who went and, you know, patted children's heads, as I think Barack Obama said.
Yeah.
She was there as his representative. Even Madeleine Albright, who was our Secretary of State, traveled with her. It was Hillary that delivered the tough message. You know, and Madeleine has said that. Hillary was an amazing first lady, but she was much more than any normal first lady. She had the first office in the East, you know, the West Wing, the East Wing, the traditional first lady, Rosalynn Carter, because I was working in the Carter administration. Rosalynn Carter's office was in the East Wing. Hillary was in the West Wing with her husband. She had a staff that was second to none, and everybody knows it's the same staff, frankly, that she still has, because she has kept all the people that have ever worked for her, which is another sign of her great loyalty and the passion that people have for her, because they know her, and she is someone who is innovative, who's out there, who, you know, I was just with her former chief of staff in Iowa. We went canvassing door to door, and her former press secretary, and they would say, Hillary would just say, what do you want to do? How high can we go? How can we get this done? She did an enormous amount of work on children's health care. Of course, she had the health care bill. It didn't pass. But then she went into and did incremental reforms. She got 6 million children for the children's health insurance plan. She spearheaded that from the White House. She was the champion. She has been a champion for women and children forever, since, you know, she started in law school.
You mentioned Eleanor Roosevelt. Franklin Roosevelt took on corporate power head on. I mean, you know, he called them economic royalists. He talked about how these economic royalists say that we seek to overthrow the institutions of American democracy. What they're really complaining about is that we seek to destroy their power. Our allegiance to democracy requires the overthrow of this type of power.
Mm-hmm.
How do you respond, or how does the Clinton campaign respond to the charges from the Barack Obama, the Dennis Kucinich, the John Edwards campaigns that she's in with the corporate dynasties.
How can she be in with the corporations when part of the reason her health care bill didn't pass was because she fought the insurance companies. She fought the pharmaceutical companies.
But isn't she taking money from them?
Is John Edwards taking money from trial lawyers? Is Barack Obama taking money from lobbyists? Yes.
Yeah.
Everyone takes money from other interests, but the point is she has fought them forever. She's fought them when she was First Lady of Arkansas. She's fought them when she was First Lady of the United States. She's fought them in the Senate.
So do you think that Do you think she has the potential to take on that Franklin Roosevelt mantle?
Absolutely.
And,
she's a fighter, and she has taken them on. Look at how she took on the... You know, we never had the chance of a comprehensive health care bill until she took it on in the White House. Mm-hmm. And you could argue, yes, she made some mistakes, and it failed. Maybe because she didn't bring in the Congress enough. She acknowledges that she made mistakes. But she knows what she did wrong, and she knows how to fix it. She has been there. She's been there for 8 years. You know, you learn. And she, of all people, as you all know, and I think everybody will attest, is a fighter. She gets up the next day, and she goes ahead, and she learns from her mistakes. And I think she is the only one that can really do this. Because she really knows.
Would she take us back
land.
To the pre-Reagan era and start enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act again?
I don't know that I can't.
Jimmy Carter
was
the last president.
Yeah.
You know, breaking up AT&T had actually increased shareholder value after when all was said and done. But it seems that we've got a handful of large media corporations in every.
Well,
industry.
I think that certainly is a concern. It's a concern of mine. I could tell you that, and I think it is a concern of most of the Democrats.
Ambassador Elizabeth Bagley, the former ambassador to Portugal and the United States Acting Commission on Public Diplomacy.
Yes, I'm on the Commission on Public Diplomacy.
Thanks so much for being with
us. Thank you. Good to be here.
You're an articulate spokesperson for Hillary Clinton.
Spokeswoman is okay. I don't mind being a woman either.
Uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Hartman Program. Tom Hartman. Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
And welcome back. Broadcasting live from Manchester, New Hampshire, the day of the primaries. Tom Hartman here with you. Back in 1978, my wife Louise and I moved out here to New Hampshire and ended up on Stinson Lake in Rumney. And in the fall of 1978, started the New England, it's pronounced Salem, based on a German program, but it's spelled like Salem, the New England Salem Children's Village. Which at that time was a program for abused and abandoned and orphaned and emotionally disturbed kids. Out of that program is still there and is still running and doing very well. And out of that, about a decade ago, we started a school for ADHD kids, Asperger kids, special needs kids, and some very bright kids. And that's called the Hunter School, and out of the metaphor, Hunter in a Farmer's World, that I'd coined to describe ADHD. And we have a couple folks with us here today. Tim Tyler, the director of Hunter School. By the way, the website, and I encourage you to check this out if you're at all interested in education, even broadly, hunterschool.org. There's some fascinating information over there. Tim Tyler is with us, the director. Hey, Tim, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for having us on.
And, there's a certain amount of, I just have to tell my audience, I'm still on the board here 28 years later of both institutions, so there's a certain amount of just naked plug here for a great organization. But it's also, you guys have, well, first of all, give us a snapshot of the program at Hunter School and the New England Salem Children's Village.
Essentially, as you outlined, we're located in rural New Hampshire, about an hour north of Concord, and the school itself services right now 23 students, K-8. And our focus in the school is, besides focusing on students with ADHD and Asperger's and other assorted disabilities, our focus is on strength-based education, which is something we've really started to implement this year in particular. We believe that every person, every child has a strength and a passion. And what we've been doing this year is try to develop that strength and passion. And we feel by doing that, we're helping to develop self-esteem and self-confidence with our students. So we've worked on some projects. I call them pilot projects this year. They've been successful with two or three students. And I have one student with us today.
Right. And one of those projects had to do with politics, which is why we're talking about it on the radio today on the day of the primary and about politics. And in fact, let's move it to Andrew. And if Andrew, you've got to get right on. You got to basically kind of eat the microphone. You know, it's you got to talk right into it there. And this is Andrew Cartaglia Murphy. Am I pronouncing your name right?
It's Cartaglia.
Oh, thank you, thank you. And great to have you with us, Andrew. Andrew, tell us about the political process at Hunter School, hunterschool.org. What did you guys do? What did the kids do with regard to this primary?
Well, in one of our classes, there's, I think, the homeroom. They all did, like, posters of, like, the candidates and who they wanted. And today, before I left school to come here, we were taking, like, who we think are going to vote and, like, who we want to win.
Oh, interesting. There was a straw poll a while back, wasn't there?
Yes.
Among the kids there. And how did it come out?
Well, Ron Paul and Hillary won the straw poll.
Uh-huh. Hillary on the Democratic side, Ron Paul on the Republican side.
Yes.
Do you see the kids as being involved? You guys as being involved in politics? You know, the boys and girls at Hunter School and Solemn is. What does politics mean to you?
People who are running for president.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this isn't a test. I'm just wondering. You know, is because a lot of us see this as, you know, this is our democracy. This is our country. This is how the future happens. And you're going to be a big part of the future. You know, you're going to grow up and be part of the future.
Mm-hmm.
What is the best way for people who are involved or interested in politics or politicians to reach out to kids?
By having them involved in as much, like, work for, like, projects as possible, and I think that will help them to get into it, I guess.
Yeah. And do you get a sense that kids are becoming politically active and interested?
Yeah.
By the way, the program is vegetarian. What do you think of the vegetarian diet?
Well, actually, after the first couple of days, I was pretty at the beginning, I was pretty bummed about it, but then after a couple of days, I really didn't even notice.
Cool. So it's an all natural foods.
Yes.
I love the food there. So I lived there from 78 to 83 and still go back from time to time. Andrew, anything you want to add about the straw poll or the political situation there? You're having another vote now this afternoon?
Yeah.
Any sense of how it's going to turn out? Any predictions you want to make? And how do you think New Hampshire's going to go?
I think New Hampshire's a pretty big part in the voting for presidential.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I don't really know who's going to win or who might win.
Yeah, great. Andrew, thank you so much. Margie Norton is with us too. She's one of the house parents. And Margie, can you drop in for a second and say hi?
Sure.
Great. I'd love to hear your take on you know what's going on with the kids with regard to this. Are, you know, with the whole we're talking with Margie Norton, one of the house parents at the Hunter School. HunterSchool.org is the website. Check it out. With the kids in politics.
I'm sorry?
What's going on with the perspective? I'm interested in how you use, you know, Tim was talking about strength-based education, and I know there's a variety of different areas where a particular passion has been evoked.
Yes.
For some of the kids, has it been political?
Yes. We have actually taken some of the children to see some of the candidates. We went to see Obama in Manchester with Oprah, and we took some of the children to see Mitt Romney, mm-hmm. and Meredith, and the children were really interested, and we talked a lot about it on the way and afterwards, and they really seemed, I think, of course, they're probably mirroring their parents' ideas,
mm-hmm.
but they really it has been a good thing for the children. We've all enjoyed taking part in it and watching them take part in it as well.
What's your sense of what's going on here in New Hampshire? Do you think that the polls are right, that probably it's going to be Barack Obama on the Democratic side and John McCain on the Republican side?
I really do.
As a New Hampshireite?
As a New Hampshireite, I do. Yeah. I do feel that that's probably the way it will go.
It's going to be interesting to see how this all shakes out. Well, thank you for the great work that you're doing, Margie, at the Hunter School, hunterschool.org. And Andrew, thank you so much for dropping by. It's great talking with you today. And
thank you.
You're welcome. And if we can just, Tim, wrap this up real quickly, and then we'll go to a little bit earlier than normal break. Tim Tyler, the director of Hunter School, hunterschool.org, any final thoughts?
Well, you asked some questions about the students involved in the activities as far as the election, and one of the most exciting things that we saw them do was in writing the speeches, they then had to stand up in front of a large group and present them. And if you'd told me that in August when I started at Hunter School that that would happen, I wasn't sure I would see that. But before the project completed, I had one student in my office saying, my speech isn't good enough. It's not as good as, actually, it was a student who's doing McCain. It's not as long and as good as the student who's doing Obama. And I pointed out, well, you know, McCain comes right to the point. He knows his stance on issues. So maybe that really fits his candidacy. Yeah. And that student was all right about it. And when he gave his speech that night, he was wearing his father's wedding suit.
That's great.
And the student who did Obama, who actually comes from Colorado, did a wonderful job in his presentation. And Andrew, who's here today, Andrew was the MC of that activity. He basically announced the campaigns that were represented there. He introduced each student, not an adult. He basically ran the activity. And we have Andrew basically helping people when they visit our school, showing them our residence and our facility. So that was a big part of what he did. He's kind of our director of public relations from that activity.
You do a great job, Andrew.
He really has. So it was exciting, too, because we did have one student who individually did meet Mitt Romney about a half an hour from where the school was, and they arranged that, and he was extremely excited. Wore a suit and went down and shook his hand and actually asked him three or four questions. I mean, that's something he's never going to forget.
Yeah. So it's great. Politics as education, and it's not that we're trying to turn kids into political creatures or something. I mean, you're also doing programs that have to do with nature. You've got there's a variety of strength-based education programs.
We have one student who came on board the beginning of the year. They moved from Montana to New Hampshire to go to Hunter School. That particular young lady, first day there, had a dragonfly land in her hand. I mean, I've never seen that. And so we do have a regional science center that deals with the nature of New Hampshire. They have a job shadow program and got her scheduled in that so that for 6 weeks she spent Friday afternoons visiting that center, walked a coyote, and took pictures, and the next part of her piece will be to put a PowerPoint or some kind of presentation together.
Tim Tyler, the director. It's hunterschool.org, the website. Thank you to you all.
All right, thank you very much for having us.
16 minutes past the hour.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Past the hour, the Tom Hartman Program, brought to you in part by the 200,000 members of SEIU 1199, fighting for health care as a right, not a privilege, here in America. Sitting across from me now, Jim Dean, one of my favorite people, I got to tell you, just one of my favorite people on earth. Jim Dean, Howard Dean's brother. He's the head of Democracy for America, democracyforamerica.com, one of the most proactive organizations out there doing brilliant training. And along with Jim today, Daniel Medris, thank you, who's the communications director. Jim and Daniel, welcome to the program.
Tom, thanks for having us on.
Oh, it's great. It is so great to see you again, Jim.
Well, I'm glad you're up here. It's a great day in New Hampshire.
It is.
Yeah.
And because?
Well, because, first of all, the rumors are we're going to see about 500,000 voters turn out, a substantially higher number than the last
time. Which is about half the population of the state.
Yeah, and that is really, really big. And you know how we are about citizen activism, you know, key to solving the problems in our democracy right now. And so that is, to me, the first step of what is hopefully a lot of other things. We have a wonderful network, Democracy for New Hampshire, here that worked very hard on Carol Shea Porter's race, very hard on Paul Hoad's race, very hard for a legislature that turned both chambers for the first time since the Civil War in 2006. And need to get more citizens engaged, and it's great when you see a turnout like this happening right now.
I have been saying forever, it's not enough to vote.
You are so
it
right.
Is not enough to vote. These times are so critical. What are the things that, you know, give us a mini DFA course.
Sure.
We've got about, I think, about 3 minutes here.
Okay. It's with us, it's just about getting active. We got 690,000 members that are, you know, calling into legislatures when we have campaign finance reform in states or other issues that are before us. Getting connected. We have about 790 groups around the country. Getting trained. We've had about 13,000 people go through that program, and it helps you become a lot smarter about how to work on campaigns and how to run for office.
For example, what would you train me in how to get out there and be a more effective activist?
Well, it is a holistic approach to campaigns. How to target voters. How to talk to a voter in 27 words, make 3 points, and do it all in 9 seconds. That's really important.
Yeah,
voter,
it is.
Voter contact is, in the first few seconds you've got with a voter are the most important ones. So it's right down to that sort of nitty-gritty, as well as trying to raise money and how to communicate better with the media and all of these things that go into either running for office or, if you're going to go to work on somebody's campaign, understanding what it is that has to go into all aspects of campaigning. Or if you're going to join the party, how to be more effective in doing that. You know, it's tough to do. It's tough to sit through all those meetings. But if we're going to take ownership of this process, which is what this is about, you got to do it. And
yeah.
Anything we can do to help people do that and make that more effective, both in and outside of our community, is really important. And to anybody who's listening out there, it's you know, you can certainly get on our website, democracyforamerica.com, but there's a lot of other great groups out there, and, you know, consider doing that as well. But most importantly, don't just vote. Get active. Get connected, get trained, run for office,
show up.
Get involved.
Yeah, show up. Now, Democracy for America kind of emerged out of the Dean for America,
yeah.
You know, the original Dean campaign. But if somebody was to show up and say, you know, I'm really a Green,
yeah,
and I intend to join the Green Party when I'm all done with this, and I'm here about that. Or for that matter, somebody showed up and said, you know, I'm a Republican, and I'd like to help take back the Republican Party. I think, you know, when Dwight Eisenhower said that a 91% top income tax rate was a good thing,
mm-hmm.
I agree with him. When Dwight Eisenhower said that he
yeah.
thought that unions should have the right to bargain, I agree with him. You know, when Dwight
yeah.
Eisenhower said we need to worry about the military-industrial complex, I agree with him. I want to take back the damn Republican Party.
Yep.
If somebody shows up like that, you're going to open the door to them.
Well, we certainly are. We are a partisan organization. We've only supported Democratic or some independent candidates in the past. But the fact is that if you look at our membership, we have a lot of independents. We have Greens. We even have a couple of Republicans. And certainly my home state of Connecticut, I know that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do open the doors to everybody. You know, I think the fault line in this country is really not about left versus right as so much as it is about a culture of activism versus a culture of incumbency. And Americans want change.
That's a brilliant way to say it.
Well, I really believe it, and I've been talking about this for a while, but, I, the Americans want change. We're going to get beaten to death with that word. But really, right now, if we're going to get something done, we need citizens to be running the program. And we don't care what they call themselves as much as we care what they're committed to.
And if I show up at, if I go to democracyforamerica.com and I find that there's a training near me or one that I can get a cheap airfare to and want to spend the weekend in that city, what does it cost?
Well, it's good, actually pretty good value. It's $60, 2 days, 2 lunches, and includes the social hour. So you get a lot for your money. We have never turned anybody away for financial reasons. We have a great student rate. We have a scholarship program for those who can't afford that. And if you can't afford to travel, we've got actually a night school program that we're going to get started in February, national conference call that we pay for where we have a slideshow that you can follow. We usually have a good guest on, talk about different aspects of training and of political campaigns. So you can actually do this from the comfort of your own home if that's what you want to do.
That is absolutely great. It's absolutely great. And you're growing,
yes.
clearly.
This is
catching fire.
Yeah, we grew a lot this year, which I was a little surprised about.
Are there ongoing? I know in Portland there's a regular. I don't know if it's weekly or monthly. I get the emails and I haven't.
Usually monthly.
Unfortunately, it's in the evening and
yeah.
I have to be in bed early because of the radio show thing. But it's a regular meetup.
Yep.
These are going on all over the country. This isn't just unique to Portland.
No, they're going on in 790 places around the country. Some of them meet more often, but you can find a place near you. And if there isn't close enough, start your own.
Again, democracyforamerica.com. Jim Dean, you're one of the really good guys.
Well, Tom, be well. I'm glad you're here in New Hampshire.
Thanks,
Jim. We need you.
Thanks so much for showing up.
Okay, thanks.
And you too, Daniel. Thank you. It's 27 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
I'm an American.
and welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. We're Americans here. And one of the great Americans is with me, Dennis Kucinich, and Elizabeth Kucinich, his wife. Dennis and Elizabeth, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much,
Tom. Thank you.
Great to have you both here. Dennis, back a decade or so ago, maybe a little longer, was the first time you and I met. I was on the board of Marianne Williamson's Global Renaissance Alliance, and she had put together, and I believe that you played a role in putting it together. I don't recall. That's where I met you in Washington, D.C.
I was supportive of the effort.
That Department of Peace conference.
Marianne was just amazing in what she does. She's an amazing person, as you know.
She is. She's a dear friend and has been for many years, and that's how you and I first met. I don't know if you recall. She introduced us. So I have been following your career ever since then and have been continuously impressed. It's one of the reasons why, as my listeners know, I've gone to your website and given money to your campaign. I think that having a progressive, a continual progressive voice, I mean, ongoing, the last campaign, this campaign, hopefully the next campaign, if you don't win this campaign, I mean, just, you know, keep up the voice and keep... It is so important.
Thank you.
What do you see as? Let me rephrase this. Rather than the normal fluff question, this morning, the media seems to be struggling with how to portray Hillary Clinton yesterday, tearing up about is she a pathetic woman? On the one hand, in quotes, you know, is she being too feminine? Is this kind of a sign of weakness, or did she stick a fork in her leg and she's making herself cry? The media gets these narratives about people, and that's just both of those are absolute BS narratives. They've got a narrative about you. They've got a narrative about John Edwards. They've got a narrative about Barack Obama. None of these narratives, to me, seem to be truthful. They all seem to be just the convenient media narrative, and there's this massive herd mentality around them. How do we break through that? How do we change that conversation?
That's a very perceptive analysis. I think... The responsibility of the media, the mainstream media we're talking about, is quite broad today in a democratic society. One of the things I think we need to do is stop media corporations from being monopolies. We should not let them integrate vertically with other industries, like defense, for example. We should have the media provide free time to federal candidates. We need a public finance system of elections. You know, these are some of the kinds of reforms that are necessary on the media standpoint, and the media should not be permitted to, their executives should not be permitted to contribute to candidates, because they can also contribute with free news time if they want.
Right. Or just limit that to the $2,300 or something.
Well, you know, but even then, I mean, there should be, if you're a broadcast licensee, right. And they all are, they're licensed by the federal government under the Federal Communications Act, 1934, broadcast licensees are supposed to serve in the public interest, convenience, and necessity. If they are serving their own self-interest, apart from what the public interest is, you have a problem. And if it's just blind corporate interest, the media can, mainstream media, can end up doing a disservice to America. So, you know, there's a question of power in a democratic society, and what I think has happened as a result of ABC, Disney's attempt to successful attempt to exclude me from the last presidential debate is really an example of how the media has become a power unto itself with its own agenda that's decoupled from the mass of concerns, the practical aspirations of the American people for jobs, health care, peace, energy, sustainable.
I saw the introduction to that, I'm forgetting who the moderator was at the time, but, you know, went through this whole thing about 5% threshold in one of five different... But Facebook was one of the co-sponsors, and you were more than 5% on Facebook's polling. What am I missing here? Elizabeth, you want to take this one?
Well, it just, you know, it's not only the Facebook poll. He fulfilled the criteria on their own poll. He's won 47 states on the Progressive Democrats poll, about the same amount on the Democracy for America poll. He keeps winning all these straw polls in Washington State and in Virginia.
Yeah.
You know, Dennis is really winning on all of these different things. Much, you know, and nationally, he's currently polling today higher than Richardson is. And I think it's really interesting to see that
in this so-called debate, there are only voices that are for war. There are only voices that are for a for-profit healthcare system, keeping it the same. There's only voices who have voted for the Patriot Act. There isn't a debate. Everybody's thinking the same way. They're all, you know, very susceptible to the idea that, well, we've got to sort of homogenize the idea that we're not so different from the Republicans. When the base of the country, the Democratic base and the independent base, all want a change. And that's why this key word of change is always being flung around.
Oh, the Republicans are falling over each other, to use that word.
Exactly. And yet, let's we, the voters, stand in our integrity. We know, the people who listen to this program, we understand that the fallacy of this whole situation. Now we've got to have the courage of our conviction to make sure we don't slip into it, to make sure that we actually vote for ourselves, vote for our issues, vote for what we believe in. Because it's only when we stand up and show our numbers that things will change. And the progressives, being actually the majority of the Democratic base now, if they aligned behind their candidate, and they only actually have one candidate, there's only one person up there who voted against the war, there's only one candidate for a single-payer, not-for-profit healthcare system, there's only one candidate that voted against the Patriot Act, all of these different situations, they would win. They just need the courage of their convictions.
Did you want to add something to that, to
no.
Congressman?
No, I you know... That's
well
exactly
said.
What I feel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Here. Here. So, what's happening with ABC?
We filed a lawsuit, and it's again, Tom. I don't take personal offense at this. Right. I feel that there ought to be a real debate, not a monologue in four tones.
Right.
And what they're trying to do, and you know, I've talked to people who are pretty well placed in the media, who said that they heard 4 months ago that ABC was looking to take steps to try to winnow the field, which is interesting because...
But on the Republican side, they had 8 people on the
right,
platform.
Right, but I'm talking about the Democratic side. Yeah. And what's interesting is that it wasn't just about this debate. ABC has essentially not covered my campaign at all. And in addition to that, when we had the debate with Stephanopoulos in Iowa, I waited a half hour for them to call on me. Now, there's a real concern here where they can essentially... try to steal a voice that reflects mainstream feelings about the war, for example. You hear all this talk about how, well, the opposition to the war inside the country seems to be going down, things are getting quiet. Listen, if the peace movement doesn't have a voice represented in the mainstream media, then it doesn't exist, does it? And if you have a link between media interests and defense contractors, in the case of NBC, which is owned by a defense contractor, General Electric Raytheon, right, you then have a very dangerous link between perpetuation of war for economic interest and a desire to link coverage and political choice on who to cover on the other hand. So this is a very, you know,
this
it's a moment.
This is the military-industrial media complex.
You're the first person that put it that way, and you know what?
It works.
That's exactly right.
It's really, you know, Dwight Eisenhower's worst dream wasn't as bad as it's worse than what Dwight Eisenhower imagined.
You're the first person that put it military-industrial media complex, but you know what? That's exactly what it is. That is exactly what it is.
Yeah. So, you know, this morning, watching the news before I came in to do the show, you know, just watching the TV news and the normal pablum and whatnot, but I thought it was interesting. Somebody had asked Hillary Clinton, or maybe she was speaking contemporaneously, about health care, and she said, you know, I know that some people are in favor of single-payer health care, and then she went into her thing about, you know, why she's not, but I was astounded even to hear those words come out of her mouth.
We've been running a lot of commercials on that here.
I saw your commercial on the TV this morning, actually.
So maybe she saw one.
Yeah, I don't know, but you're having an effect in changing the dialogue. I wonder to what extent you're happy with that and how you're going to continue that as time goes on.
Well, I think...
What role do you see yourself
playing? Look, I have... no delusions about being an underdog here. Mm. But, you know, every 47 million Americans that don't have any health care are underdogs as well.
Yep.
My voice is getting a strong response across America, particularly from progressive Democrats and also from Republicans, by the way, and independents who believe that there needs to be a solid contest of ideas. And so, you know, that's what I'm about. I mean, I've been doing that my whole life. And so the presidency is a vehicle by which you can achieve dramatic transformation in social, political landscape in America, and economic landscape, of course. Uh, the importance of standing up and fighting for what you believe in is related directly to change. Because if people see that I can do that and stand in and do it, then maybe they'll be ready to do it in their own lives and vote courageously.
Yeah. Now, I see over on the Republican side this wave of support coming for Ron Paul. And it seems like it's basically the same thing, although it's interesting. Again, here in New Hampshire, they had a bunch of Ron Paul supporters, young people, and they were asking them, well, why are you in favor of him? They couldn't name an issue. They didn't know what his positions were on things like Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and whatnot. So it's like...
I know what it is.
Yeah, it's so of my listeners.
He captures the rebellious spirit of youth.
And that's my
point. Spirit of rebellion that goes on in this country, and it's related directly to the establishment not being able to meet the practical aspirations of people for jobs, health care, housing, education, all those things.
And so to the extent that Barack Obama may be capturing that same rebellious spirit of youth, how do we move him in a more progressive direction should he end up...
Well, that certainly is something that... it's why I have to stay in a presidential campaign no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw you change Howard Dean, by the way.
It's not only about how does, you know, what Dennis is doing. It's really about what people do. If they really stand up for themselves, if they really stand on the issues they believe in, they don't need to compromise. The progressives are in a majority now. If they go with their candidate, they can change the whole platform.
Well said. Dennis and Elizabeth Kucinich. Yeah, DennisForPresident.com.
Thank you.
The number four.
Thank you very much, Tom. Appreciate being with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for dropping by.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person?
Clean air, blue sky, will they be here when I die? Tall trees, white snow, will they be here when I go?
It's not just time to make a plan. It's time to make a change. Welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast from Congressman David Bonnier is with us, former congressman from Michigan, and the manager of the John Edwards 08 campaign, Congressman Bonnier. Welcome.
Nice to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you
with
us.
Time to make a change. I like that.
Indeed. Well, it is. I mean, it's just there's...
some past time and... You know, we went through Iowa, and the message was very clear that change won over the status quo, and here we are in New Hampshire, and we're going to go on with that message, and there's really two basic agents for that in the Democratic Party, or for any party actually out there, are the two major parties, and that's John Edwards and Barack Obama.
John Edwards and Barack Obama. Barack Obama seems to have caught fire. John Edwards, you know, I think Barack Obama's a great guy. My position on him has been that I think, frankly, he could be the next John Kennedy. He has that kind of charisma. But I'm very concerned that the Republican, if he's the nominee, the Republican attack yet is going to be that 30-second soundbite of Bill Clinton on Charlie Rose saying, do you really want to turn the White House over to a man who's had less than 1 year of federal experience in the United States Senate? And, you know, it just seems like, you know, at this point in time, John Kennedy was in his second term in the Senate. He had served 3 terms, as I recall, in the House of Representatives before that. And, John Edwards has been there and done that. What positioning John Edwards and Barack Obama as the two change agents, how then do you take on Barack Obama?
Well, it's difficult because he's got so much money, and we can do it, and we can win, and I'll tell you how. You know, in Iowa... we came in a close second, and we beat the Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton machine in Iowa. They outspent us. Obama and Clinton outspent us about 5-1. But John's message is so powerful, and it's different than Obama's message. John's message is that, you know, basically, you've got to stand up to the entrenched money interest in Washington, D.C., that have corroded and corrupted the system. You just can't sit down like Barack Obama wants to do at a table and cut a deal with them. Because it won't work. If it would have worked, we'd have had universal health care now. We'd have had a different energy policy. We've had a better trade policy. We've had all that stuff. But it's not working. And we need somebody like Teddy Roosevelt, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who actually stood up to the trust, stood up to the large corporations on behalf of working people. Edwards has done that his whole life in the courtroom. He did it in the Senate. He's done it in the last 3 years out on the stump working on behalf of union organizing workers. He's been involved in 240 organizing drives, Tom, all over the country. Picket lines, hunger strikes. He was helped lead the effort to get the minimum wage on the ballot in 7 states, giving a million people a raise. He's taken on these multinationals, and he knows how to beat them. That's not to say all corporations are bad. There are good companies out there like Harley-Davidson and Costco, you know, versus Sam's Club. I mean, there's some good companies out there. But the fact of the matter is, there are some that are impeding progress in this country.
Well,
we need a fighter.
It's about the rules of the game,
right,
ultimately. I mean, it's
it is.
People call up and they say, you know, Walmart's a terrible company. Walmart isn't the problem. It's the laws that allow Walmart to do what they do that are the problem.
Or the lack of enforcement of the laws that that would impede them. And when and we're
with regard to labor in particular.
Labor and safety standards and discrimination on women. I could go on for on Walmart for a whole hour here. But
yeah.
John Edwards is going to stand up and make the fight. I'm not so sure Barack Obama knows how to do that or can do that. I'll give you one example if you can give me just this 30 seconds here. When he was in the Illinois State Senate, he was given the responsibility of a major health care bill. And this bill had as its original intent to provide universal access to everybody in the state of Illinois. He brought in the corporate lobbyists from the health care industry into this debate. He invited them in. They came in. They convinced him that it should be a goal rather than a reality. So they changed the language to make it a goal. And then he put together a task force, Obama, and he invited them to sit on the task force where they basically, took it apart. And we don't have anything as a result of that effort in terms of getting universal health care. They did some other things in the bill for health care, but that goal was subverted by them, and he was an accomplice to that. I think that's not what we need in Washington, D.C. today. We need someone who's going to stand up and change that system. The city's drifted in a very bad direction over the decades, and we need somebody strong to change it.
Yeah, well said. And John Edwards in my opinion, he's the guy who can do it the best. I'll say that, just right straight out. How do you respond to the charges from the Kucinich camp that Dennis Kucinich is the real progressive in the race, not John Edwards?
Well, Dennis Kucinich is a progressive, but you need to look at several things here. Number one, you need to look at likability, you need to look at someone's progressive record, and you need to look at electability. And Dennis can't get elected president of the United States. John Edwards can.
So, and finally, I had somebody call earlier in the it was toward the end of last week saying, John Edwards, he's worth millions of dollars. How can he talk about greedy corporations when he's made all his money? He must be a greedy guy himself.
No,
How do you break up that idea that sure, somehow somebody having money means that they're greedy?
Well, the fact of the matter is he made his money defending working people against corporations.
Right.
And some of our wealthiest and most progressive people in the presidency were people from wealth. Teddy Roosevelt came from wealth. Franklin Delano Roosevelt came from immense wealth. John Kennedy came from wealth. Lyndon Johnson had wealth. These are people who stepped up and fought for civil rights and working people and fought to get rid of poverty. And John Edwards comes out of that tradition.
So it's what you do, not what you have.
Sure. I mean, what happened in, I told you about his efforts on behalf of working people to get them unionized. 240 separate union organizing drives. Nobody in the history of the country has ever done that at that level. Number two, the minimum wage, we talked about that. He led the effort there. But when Katrina hit, took 700 kids down there. They worked for a week to rebuild a neighborhood. Poverty has been his passion. So John Edwards on these issues leads to this field.
He's a good man. JohnEdwards.com, the website. Congressman David Bonnier, thanks so much for being
Thank
here.
You, Tom, and good luck in your show, and have a great year.
Thank you. Thank you. Good luck. Good luck with the campaign.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. News without conflicts of global corporate interest. Tom Hartman Program. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the third hour of our program, broadcasting live from Manchester, New Hampshire, the epicenter of the of the political madness. I mean, it's just, it's incredible. Sylvia Larson is with me. She is the president of the Senate in the state of New Hampshire. She's 14 years in the New Hampshire Senate, 8 years on the City Council of the City of Concord, which is the capital here in New Hampshire, sponsored the First in the Nation College Savings Program. And Sylvia, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here.
Great to have you here. And by the way, let me just put in a plug here. I'm on the board of and helped start, along with my wife, in 1978, a program for abused and abandoned kids in New Hampshire, the New England-Salem Children's Village up in Romney. And I hope you are a strong advocate for more funding for residential treatment, group homes, kids in crisis, foster care, the whole
Absolutely.
Right across the board. Because there's such a problem in this state with institutions and organizations like that getting funded. I mean, like most other programs in the state, are having to turn to individual donors and contributors and really, you know, that's unseemly.
Well, you know, in New Hampshire in 2006, the Democrats took the majority of both the House and the Senate, and there's a large group of dedicated folks in that state house who understand the need to fund social programs that help keep people well and healthy.
Yeah, good. Good on you. And to that end, you're here in part about the political process, but also as an advocate for the candidacy of Senator Hillary Clinton.
I am. I've been an early supporter. I knew Bill Clinton, and Bill Clinton was an early Bill Clinton supporter, and spent some time before I went on to the Hillary campaign. But I honestly, after looking all the candidates over, knew right away that she was the candidate ready to go, ready to take office from day one. Just a terrific, capable, experienced, and engaging person.
Now, when we were talking just before we came on the air, you said you'd had Barack Obama over to your home. I mean, you seriously looked at the other candidates.
Absolutely. We took time. We took time early in the beginning of this year to meet everyone. Over the years, of course, we've gotten to know a few of them because of the contacts we have up here. But I did take time. I had Barack at the house. I had Hillary at the house. We've had most every one of the major Democratic candidates at the House.
John Edwards.
Yeah, Evan Bayh.
Yeah.
You know, they've all been through, yeah. And it's a terrific opportunity we have to get to know folks and to get to know them well.
So what was it that caused you to say that Hillary Clinton is your candidate as opposed to Barack Obama, John Edwards, you know, one of the other? For example, it seems like Joe Biden has a mind-boggling resume. I mean, he's dropped out of the race now, but he's a very charismatic guy. He's
a
very smart guy.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've met him. I'm so impressed by him.
Well, you know, I think it was a mixture of head and heart. It's the experience that Hillary had, that her ability, her list of things she's gotten done, the commitment she has to children and families, the commitment she's had in Arkansas to education. So there's the intellectual part, the commitment she has to health care, providing universal or expanding health care availability to everyone in this country. So it was that experience level and knowing that from day one, I come from city council, I come from a state government perspective, and I know how long it takes to get to know the system, to make things work, to make change happen. So for me, it was her ability to make change happen, knowing that she not only cared about making the changes and I agreed with the changes she wants to do, but she has the network, the experience and knowledge of how local how states work, how local state governments work, how nonprofits work, how you make it happen. And then, of course, her experience as First Lady, knowing how international policies and getting to know the leaders of foreign countries in her years of travel there, and then her knowledge of how Congress works. That fullness of experience, to me, made a difference. As I say, I come from a background of 14 years in the state Senate alone, which it takes time to learn how things work and to create the network to make it happen when you're really genuinely are ready to make it happen.
If I may change the topic just slightly for a moment, since we're here in New Hampshire, it's increasingly obvious or apparent that John Sununu won his election by virtue of Republican dirty tricks. In fact, crimes.
Absolutely.
In fact, one of the guys who went to jail has written a book about it. He's going to be on this show next week.
Yeah,
be, called Confessions of a Republican Operative.
That phone jamming.
Yeah.
Federal
yeah.
offense.
Yeah.
Just a clear,
so,
overt.
So how come this guy's still in the Senate when he won a very, very narrow race over Gene Shaheen, who was a very strong Democratic candidate, the former governor, very, very popular here in New Hampshire? And what's going to be done in this election cycle to try and take that seat back from John Sununu?
Well, there's already a large group of people who are so offended by what happens that they're out there working already, even in the midst of presidential primary, with their sights on the U.S. Senate race. I think, you know, as you look at that crime of phone jamming and you recognize the levels of that it went into the political organization, it's clear that they need to be held accountable for their actions. And, of course, Sununu was elected and is now up for re-election. This is the year when New Hampshire has to speak and say, you know, you cannot get away with that kind of subversion of the democratic process and the criminal behavior. You know, you may want to win, and we all want to win our elections, but you better well follow the laws or they'll be consequences.
Well, your state saw it. I mean, your state saw the dirty face of basically Karl Rove. We see, when you look back at the phone records, you see that this guy was making calls to the White House the day that he was doing this and the days before he was doing this. And given that, I'm curious what your thoughts are on investigations that may lead to impeachment or indictment of high officials, whether it's the indictment of Karl Rove or the impeachment of Bush or Cheney, over things like this kind of, you know, what happened in Ohio in 2004. Now we're learning more and more how, you know, from caging to all the you know, the reallocation of voting machines and things, what happened in 2000 down in Florida. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, what's most important, I think, is for voters to trust the democratic process. So I think that, you know, it's taken a fair amount of the private money of the Democratic Party, both in our state and I know personally the lawyers who pursued this, many of whom have not done it for pay. They have done it because of their conviction or their beliefs. And, you know, it's really... If the voters of this country are going to trust democracy, they need to know that those kinds of things cannot be gotten away with, that people cannot walk free from those. And so I believe they're going to continue to pursue that, continue to follow the leads and where it leads, and hopefully there will be consequences as a result. I'm not intimately involved in that lawsuit.
I understand. But, you know, from your lips to God's ears, I think when Bill Clinton made the decision not to pursue the Iran-Contra charges against people in the Bush administration, it set the same kind of terrible precedent that it did when Gerry Ford pardoned Richard Nixon. We really should follow through on these processes so that future people don't figure that if they can just make it to the end of the door, just get out the door, that everything will be fine. Because I really think Karl Rove thinks that, you know, in January of 2009, he's going to be safe. And he shouldn't be.
And what's most important is that we keep this country safe for democracy.
Yeah,
and
amen.
That has been a subversion.
Amen. Sylvia, we're talking with Sylvia Larson. She's the president of the Senate here in the state of New Hampshire, at the Granite State, a place where I lived for 5 years.
Did you?
Beautiful, from 78 to 83. It's a marvelous state.
It is.
And I'm curious, Sylvia, what your take is on what's happening with the Republicans in this state, the Republican primary. I'm walking around the streets here, and I'm seeing Ron Paul everywhere. I mean, not him physically, but his supporters, young people out there. It's almost like the Obama phenomenon that people are referring to in the press on the Democratic side. And the Republican Party seems to be just, you know, twisted in knots about this. That Fox News, you know, not letting them in and all this kind of thing. Eat their own, or eat their young, or something. You know, one of those phrases comes to mind. I mean, is the Republican Party? You're a political insider. You see this at a much more, you know, up close and personal level. Is the Republican Party really imploding?
Well, I think they haven't found a strong message at this point, and they haven't found a strong bearer of that message. They haven't, you know, they're all over the place, and I think it's showing up both in their organization and their candidates. And you know, a voice like Ron Paul, I think, is speaking to the keep keep government out of our lives section of America and New Hampshire. And there are a whole lot of us who believe that, you know, it shouldn't be there unless it's necessary.
Unless it's appropriate.
Certainly not in our bedrooms.
Yeah, indeed. I think he's speaking to an idealism that in some cases may be misplaced, but is very real.
Right.
Yeah. Sylvia Larson, the president of the Senate here, a Democrat in the state of New Hampshire. Sylvia, thanks so much
great
for coming.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Thank you.
Good luck
to you. Keep up the great work. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
That would be a good plan. Well, it is getting better and better and better as we see these Democrats doing better and better and better and getting more and more interest. Kathy Duvall is with us. She's the National Political Director for the Sierra Club, sierraclub.org, of course, the website. And Kathy, the Sierra Club, as I recall, is not at all a partisan organization. You're not taking partisan positions, are you?
No, we are a nonpartisan organization. We do end up endorsing, but we have not endorsed at this point. We'll endorse further down the year.
I see. So where's the Sierra Club at in this campaign? What are you all doing?
Well, with record home heating oil prices and what I think is record air temperatures on a New Hampshire primary day, voters here in New Hampshire are concerned about global warming and they're concerned about America's energy policy. And they've been expressing that concern and asking the candidates where they are on these issues. What are they going to do if they're elected as president? So we've been here on the ground working with voters, having volunteers who were at polling places across the state today, raising the issue and asking voters to think about this issue as they're voting.
The issue of global warming.
The issue of global warming and America's energy policy.
You know, as Dick Cheney was put in charge of the Energy Task Force, and
yes.
The two jobs that he was given, that and the Counterterrorism Task Force, which never met until September of 2001, tragically, I would submit, and this is my partisan swipe, I mean, you don't have to participate in this, I know, but I would submit that he did as bad a job on the Energy Task Force as he did on the Counterterrorism Task Force, and perhaps even worse in that he was proactively destructive to the possibility of the United States even beginning to go back to where Jimmy Carter was talking about.
Yeah, it is. It's been interesting to hear the candidates, actually, both the Democrats and the Republicans. There's a lot of talk about change in this election. But even Senator McCain and Governor Huckabee are talking about the need to sort of change the policies that the Bush administration has had on this issue.
Yeah, I was interested to hear John McCain yesterday talking about global warming is real and this is a problem.
He does. And he was out early on a number of years ago introducing climate bills. And he actually talks about that. He learned about the issues and the importance of it in this process of talking with voters here in New Hampshire when he first ran in 2000.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it is it's an issue that the voters care about. They see they're concerned about, are we going to have the snow for skiing? What's going to happen with the foliage as temperatures start to rise? And those are two things that really play into the New Hampshire economy. So it's not just an environmental issue. It's actually an economic issue. And
yeah.
We believe that the solutions to global warming, which is moving America to a new energy policy, will in fact help, re-energize the economy and create jobs and help keep move America forward on our economy.
Is my memory correct that John Muir was the founder of the Sierra Club?
John Muir was the founder of the Sierra Club.
And I'm sorry.
Oh, and we've started out as a hikers club and then started working on protecting open spaces and lands and have moved now into where energy and global warming are the number one issues for the Sierra Club.
My recollection is that I read an essay of, I mean, he's long gone, but an essay of his that talked about how we had to, and these are my words, not his, it's been probably 20 years since I read this, and correct me if I'm wrong, how we shouldn't just think of nature aesthetically, and we shouldn't just think of nature in terms of its utilitarian, its ability to, it, as something that we humans can use. In other words, there's some intrinsic right that nature has to itself.
There is both the wanting to protect open space and really special places in America. That's part of how we define it, our Americans, not just so that we can see it and use it, but so that future generations can.
Right.
But that it's also a way that looking at protecting the environment, it's also humans live in this, and we need to figure out how can we best, for instance, meet our energy needs, but also protect the planet for future generations at the same time.
Right. How do we move the conversation beyond just, you know, worried about the snowfall and the foliage, and into, you know, this is a biosphere, it's a closed system. Everything in this biosphere, everything that produces waste, that waste is the food for something else, with the single exception of our economic system,
right,
which goes from raw materials to waste, and it's just waste.
I think that's actually a really easy answer, because I think if we start focusing on the solutions rather than just the problem, that is, in fact, how we move the conversation forward.
Mm-hmm.
America has the technology right now to seriously reduce carbon emissions. We just need to take it off the shelf and start to implement it.
Right.
And that will get us a certain way towards stopping the global warming. We need to, we probably do need to continue to develop ways that we can meet our energy needs, grow our economy, create jobs, but still minimize the impact that we're having of those. And that's where I think we believe that American ingenuity and know-how will help us sort of figure that out. So while we have a problem that seems large and daunting of how do we, you know, address global warming, if we do, it's the meeting what scientists tell us we need to do, which is 80% reduction by mid-century, it's 2% a year. And that 2% we can
that's
do.
Doable.
Yeah, it's doable by individual actions at the local level. And it'd be nice if the person sitting in the White House were also providing some leadership on the issue.
From your lips to God's ears. Kathy Duvall, the National Political Director of the Sierra Club. Real quickly, has the Sierra Club taken a position on cap and trade versus carbon tax?
We support the cap and trade. We actually call it cap and auction in that we believe that we shouldn't be handing out the permits, but that we should be.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the insight. Kathy Duvall, SierraClub.org. Of course, the website. Check it out. Thanks, Kathy.
Thanks.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
This here's a land of plenty, and plenty's what it takes to get some health insurance in these old United States. I just know I shouldn't have to go bankrupt or on the street if the cancer comes a-calling, as it might be you or me. I ran into my congressman, said, "Your honorable, would you mind taking 20 minutes if you ever find the time to figure out some health care that would work as good for me as what you fellas got yourself in Washington, D.C. So if you get appendicitis or a splinter in your hand, I hope you're in New Zealand, Libya, or Switzerland, or somewhere else where they have somehow figured out a way to keep you upright till the good Lord says that it's your day." Hey.
Indeed, and speaking of health care, welcome back, by the way, 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from New Hampshire Radio Row, put on by Talk Radio News, talkradionews.com, and Talkers Magazine. And we're just having a fine old time here. By the way, a couple of folks have sent me notes going, how come you've had so many Hillary Clinton folks on? The folks at Talkers Magazine and Talk Radio News have, you know, people come through, they're available when I happen to be on the air, and it's really actually quite fascinating. Some campaigns have had an absolute dearth of representation here, and other campaigns have overwhelmed the place. And so basically we've been putting on the air the folks who are available to go on the air, and the very best folks that we could find. I mean, there's been a few kind of strange ones out there. But nonetheless, no, it's not a I'm not running a pro-Hillary conspiracy here today. So just the few people who have raised that question. John Thing is with us, T-H-Y-N-G. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
John is the state director,
yes,
in New Hampshire for health care, the New Hampshire for Health Care. This is a project of the SEIU.
Yes, Service Employees International Union.
And, in fact, I should add that this program is brought to you in part by the 200,000 employees of SEIU 1199.
Oh, great.
And who are working to make health care a right, not a privilege, for all Americans.
And you folks have put together this is just an incredible booklet. It's, what is it, 16 pages or something?
Yeah, it's a great comparison of all the presidential candidates' health care plans that was put in, you know, easy-to-read terms. And we sent it out to the 70,000 health care voters across the state of New Hampshire who are pledged to only support a candidate who would come up with a plan to ensure that every American has access to quality, affordable health care.
And, you know, how do they stack up? I mean, obviously that's a small question for a huge issue. But.
Sure. We saw the big difference that we saw was between the major Democratic and the Republican plans. The major Democratic candidates, especially talking about the top three, have really put together a comprehensive health care plan proposal. And they're really quite similar. They use expansion of existing government programs, a requirement on businesses, as well as a new purchasing alliance. Some of them are doing it at the national level, some of them at the regional level, but to really give folks a choice of plans to ensure that every American would be covered.
Yeah. We talked with John Edwards a while ago, I pointed out that his plan would allow anybody to buy into Medicare. And Medicare runs on a 2-3% overhead. And there is no way a for-profit health insurance company, I don't care how badly you pay your employees, there's no way a for-profit health insurance company can skim 10-15% off the top for dividends for their stockholders, you know, pay a $30 million a year salary to the CEO, have the corporate jets and the gold-plated faucets in the executive washroom, can compete with that. And essentially, allowing any American to buy into Medicare is going to put the health insurance industry out of business. And I pointed that out to John Edwards, and he says, yeah, that's our goal. And I'm not hearing put the health insurance industry out of business as a goal from the Obama and the Clinton camps. I only heard that from Edwards and from Kucinich, frankly.
Sure. Well, I think the rationale behind their plans might be a little bit different, but definitely, there's a lot of similarities, and it does use, basically a government plan as well as elements of private industry and really let them compete and see, what is the best way.
Right. Now, the Republican side.
The Republicans, it's quite different. We have not seen a comprehensive plan. We had high hopes for that there would be proposals. For example, what happened in Massachusetts. Governor Romney there did sign into law a bill that was close to providing universal coverage in the state.
That came out of a Democratic legislature.
Oh yes, I don't. But
somehow he forgets to point that out, that he didn't initiate that piece of legislation.
Well, here sometimes he forgets to point out that he was involved in any way. He's kind of run away from that as a presidential candidate, and he's just proposed more of the same. The failed policies that have resulted in 47 million Americans without coverage right now.
Well, and that's only half of it. I mean, if you change employers and you change health insurance companies and you happen to have an illness, that illness is no longer covered. I mean, it's like people, that's like indentured servitude. It's like slavery. I've got to stay with this job because I've discovered that I have, fill in the blank. And particularly if it's something, that might come back, like cancer, even if it gets knocked out, now I'll never be covered again. I mean, give me a break.
No, you're right. And, small businesses make up a big part of the economy here in New Hampshire. And I've talked to so many folks that are looking to start up their own company. They've got a great idea, they've got a business plan, but what they can't fit into it is how to pay for that health insurance. The costs are just, it's really stifling our economy in so many ways.
Right, and I was going to try and find the quote here. It'll take me a minute, but the president of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce today came out and said that he was willing to commit $60 million to taking on any, quote, anti-corporate, end quote, candidates. And he said that their attacks would be so harsh that when he's using his words, or paraphrasing his words, that he said that when he bites the candidates on the butt, they'll bleed. I mean, this is really strong language, and I would think that healthcare would be a big piece of that.
Yeah, there's definitely a big fight that's coming up, and we need as many Americans as possible to get involved and really push for a comprehensive proposal that's going to benefit all of us. And, you know, what we're trying to say is that right now, you know, everybody put their ideas on the table and let's come together around a solution, a consensus solution that is really going to move forward and that we're going to be able to get through Congress as well.
So. John, you guys are doing a great job. It's nh4healthcare.org. Are there analog organizations around the country?
Yeah, we actually we have sister organizations in Nevada. We have South Carolina's for healthcare as well. So the neat thing is when candidates here in the state are seeing someone in a purple I'm a healthcare voter t-shirt and they're asked a question, if they don't answer it, they're going to get followed up with in Nevada or South Carolina as well. So.
Good on you. John, thanks so much for dropping by.
Thank you.
I do appreciate it. Thank you so much. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, and John is doing just absolutely marvelous work. Let's take a few phone calls here. Steve in Albany, New York. Thanks for waiting as long as you have. Steve, you're on the air. What's up?
Thanks for taking my call, Tom. I just wanted to call in because you were talking much earlier in the program about how Dennis Kucinich and Ron Paul were left out of the debates over the weekend.
Yeah.
And I heard from a friend of mine on the website NewYorkersForDennisKucinich.org that there's a buzz starting to grow that between the supporters of both of those groups. And you know that if this happens in future debates, that there may be an act of civil disobedience to shut down the debate for everybody.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Everybody's feeling so disenfranchised.
Yeah.
And as somebody, you know, I didn't know until listening to your program that there were 22 people, right?
Yeah, 21 on each side. Yeah, 21 yeah, Democrats and 21 Republicans here in New Hampshire. Yeah, it's a huge ballot. I remember the first time I, you know, 1980 when I lived here and I saw the ballot, I was like, who is this guy? You know, it's like all these names you never heard of. But it's democracy.
Most of them aren't national candidates.
No, in fact, a lot of them are just trying to get 10 votes so that they can tell their grandchildren about it. You know, not a lot of them, but a couple of them. You know, you've got frankly famous New Hampshire eccentrics, but also there's some good ones there. Steve, thanks a lot for bringing it up and for the heads up on that civil disobedience. Fascinating. We'll see how that plays out. Patrice in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Patrice, got about a minute before we've got to take a break. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to ask you to put a call out to Al Gore, who I think would have the strongest endorsement to any candidate, and hopefully it would be Dennis Kucinich or John Edwards. Fortunately, Al's not running, so I think that he would be the most powerful person to get an endorsement from.
I agree, and I'm sure that any of the Democratic candidates would give their eye teeth for, or fill in the cliche of your choice, for Al Gore's endorsement. My guess is, and I'd bet money on this, that he will endorse whoever the Democratic nominee is, and he's going to wait for that. But, yeah.
I wish he wasn't playing it so safe.
Well, the fact of the matter is that all of the Democratic candidates on his issue, on global warming, are reasonably good. I think, you know, any one of them will solidly move us in a positive direction.
I agree with you, but I just would like to see him go with someone more progressive.
Yeah, so would I, for a whole variety of reasons, as you well know. But Patrice, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you, and thanks for listening. It's 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 866-303-2270. You want to drop into our live chat room, tomhartman.com, and also a blog over at airamerica.com. Stick around. Here's your opportunity to support our station by listening for our sponsors.
The Tom Hartman Program, the true people's radio.
Tom Hartman.
Well, I know what's right. I got just one life. In a world that keeps on pushing me around, but I stand my ground, and I won't back down.
No, sirree, Bob, we're not going to back down. We're going to take back this country. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 9.5 minutes before the hour, 1-866-303-2270. There may be some more folks wandering by that we'll snag. Margie in Eastchester, New York. Hey, Margie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much.
I don't understand if Hillary Clinton can be surrounded with Madeleine Albright, Janet Reno, and all those old folks. Why are the Republicans not held accountable for the Bush and Cheney administration?
I don't understand.
When Gore was running, everybody said keep away from Clinton. Nobody is making an issue that these people are, the Republicans, are distancing themselves as far as possible from Bush.
Oh, away from Bush, yeah, the Republicans.
Except for Huckabee, who has Chuck Norris.
Yeah. And I think Chuck Norris in a general election will hurt him, frankly, because he's
a Bush man.
He's viewed as just, you know, kind of a strange guy. I mean, he's not serious. Chuck Norris is not your serious political commentator. But Margie, it's an excellent question, and I thank you for calling and asking it. I would say that what we're seeing in the corporate press is that just, you know, very little discussion of why so many Republican candidates are distancing themselves from George Bush. So we have Candy, Lou D'Alessandro, and the legend. Lou, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
You're the chairman of the Finance Committee, and that would be the state senator here.
Yes.
New Hampshire State Senate.
Right.
And as chairman of the Finance Committee, I assume you're a Democrat?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, bless you. Thank you.
Great.
What's your take on what's going on all around here?
I think it's a phenomenal political happening, truly. It's the most exciting primary we've had in a long, long period of time. We've got so many qualified candidates on the Democratic side. I think there's such disruption on the Republican side. It's really a terribly mixed bag. But from the standpoint of democracy, I think we have a phenomenon that's never been seen in the history of American politics. An African-American and a woman are the leading candidates for the Democratic nomination for the presidency. I think that's wonderful. I'm a political scientist. I teach political science at St. Anselm College. I've been a college professor for a long period of time. And it's great to see the evolution of this process as far as the extension of democracy. So I'm very pleased with that. This event in New Hampshire is, the biggest thing since sliced bread.
Yeah, it is a big deal. The story that I understand here in New Hampshire is that if you want to run for president, you got to go through Lou D'Alessandro. You got to come see Lou. That all the candidates first come to you to talk about running and having an on the ground operation here. I'm wondering what your impressions are of the Democratic candidates in particular.
I think we've had the best group of candidates ever assembled in the Democratic Party. All of them are capable and qualified individuals. How could you ask for a better person on foreign policy than Joe Biden?
Yeah.
Chris Dodd, very experienced legislator, chair of the Banking Committee, done a great job as a member of Congress and as a member of the Senate. You take a look at Hillary Clinton, former First Lady, now United States Senator from New York, done great work, 35 years of hard work, toiling in the vineyards.
She's been actually a political activist all that time, not just the wife of the president.
Exactly. Barack Obama, new on the scene, legislator from Illinois, comes on, becomes a member of the United States Senate, makes a great speech at the Democratic National Convention. A wonderful candidate. So you get that mix together, and I think, as I said,
I haven't heard John Edwards.
John Edwards, another superlative candidate. So you put all of this in a mix. And you've got the best field ever assembled. We have a thoroughbred field of capable, qualified individuals to lead this nation. And I think the great movement that's taking place across the country is the sentiment for change. People are very unhappy with what's going on. We have the war in Iraq. We have a negative economic situation. We have health care prices that are out of control. And people want solutions. They want somebody they can trust, somebody they can believe in. They really want somebody who could restore hope in the democracy.
Yeah.
I think the Democrats offer that.
Yeah, Lou, you're a political animal. I mean, you're Mr. Politics here in New Hampshire. How's this going to shake out, both here in New Hampshire, and what's your sense long term?
Well, I think it's still a very it's still a tough race. I think New Hampshire's going to do what it's done in the past. It vetted the candidates and allowed people around this country to get answers to the questions that they want to ask, particularly about health care and health care reform. What does universal health care really mean?
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean everybody is insured? It's not a socialist medical plan. It's an every person insured plan. And we know that the health care costs are escalating out of sight. So that that's a situation that's got to be dealt with.
Yeah. Well, and you say it's not socialist. Our police departments are socialist. Our fire departments are socialist. Our public education system is socialist. Our court systems are socialist. Our all those things basically. I mean, you know, the definition of socialist is it's part of the commons. We collectively own it. We collectively run it. Yeah, I frankly would have no problem with attaching that word to a healthcare system.
Well, I think we accept that in the venues that you've spoken about because we consider them public venues and we consider them public servants.
Well, part of the problem is nobody ever attaches that word to them.
Right, sure.
You know, it's like,
because we've identified them as public servants over the years. but I think when you talk about the word social, then you create some animus amongst them.
Yeah, it becomes a buzzword. The Republicans
exactly.
have beaten,
they've beaten
you know, upside the head ever
the
since
years.
Roosevelt. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. But change is coming.
And it's coming very, very quickly. And it's desired and it's needed. We need a change in this country. I was around in 1960 when John F. Kennedy promised change. And we got the Civil Rights Act. We got the Voting Rights Act. Obviously, the tragedy was he had to die to produce those things.
Yeah, tragically. Lou D'Alessandro, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much. Enjoy the day.
Congressman. Senator, excuse me. And we'll be back tomorrow live from Portland, Oregon. Thanks so much for being with us. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. Get out there, get active. Have a great day.
Terrific.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.